Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is...
Aaron O'Brien.
Thanks for joining me, Aaron. It's always good to have you.
Good to be on. Good to be talking about the last episode of Discovery here for Season 1.
This is the season finale of Season 1 of Star Trek Discovery, and it's really exciting. But I just wanted to let you guys know ahead of time, in case this episode sounds maybe not as great as our episodes typically sound, we've had a hardware malfunction this evening, and instead of using my elaborate soundboard setup, my connection to the soundboard and computer's gone. It doesn't work, and so I'm recording directly into a computer with a headset mic, so I apologize if I don't sound fantastic tonight. I'm working on getting replacements.
Yeah, just to let everyone know, too, Dave, you know, he's laborious on what he does for the, you know, audio cleanup and making sure the show sounds great. So, you know, it's difficult for Dave to see his masterpiece of work getting kind of like mud kicked into it. So
yeah, it's a little bit disappointing. But thank you everyone on Patreon who has been helping us support the show. It helps out so very much. As soon as we realized we had an issue with that piece of hardware, I was able to go ahead and order two new ones. So in case it bums out on me again, I'll have a backup to ensure proper audio quality going forward. That is, unless something else bums out on me. And let's hope not.
Yeah, right. Well, let's not bore people with our problems. Dave, we've seen the final first season of Discovery. I mean...
Final countdown!
Yeah. You know, going back when we first started our podcast and just talking about, you know, Star Trek in general, this was not even a twinkle in our eye when this started. And now we've come to final, like, the full breath of the anticipation of Discovery and then the delivery of Discovery. And now we've finally have the complete season one. We've seen it all. And it's been quite a journey, don't you think?
It has been quite a journey. And to look back on this journey, we're having hopefully two guests join us next week for a Discovery retrospective. Hopefully both Stuart and Samuel from Trek Yards will be joining us. So I'm really excited about that because we had Stuart back on our episode 10, and that was so much fun. So I think having both the Trek Yard, having Team Trek Yards with us will be a lot of fun as a roundtable retrospective for the entire season.
Oh yeah, and those guys are great. If you have not checked out their YouTube channel, I mean, you're going to just geek out if you haven't, so definitely check them out.
They did, like, a two-part episode on saucer separations, and I didn't realize Klingon D7s had, like, separation procedures, and apparently they do, and it was really cool to find out and see. So, and they've got topics ranging from everything, and lately they've been really hard, you know, doing Discovery, and they've got some pretty interesting insights on that as well.
Yeah, I'd say, yeah. It's pretty cool. So, exciting news for next week. But going back to Discovery, this season one, Will You Take My Hand? Dave, non-spoilers, if people haven't seen it, what was your final takeaway and feelings of this episode and maybe just in general the season after you've seen everything?
You know, like, the episode was good. It was enjoyable. It didn't do anything what I was expecting as far as, like, plot storyline go. It's not really believable to me what happens. But the character moments are fun. Like, they've really been, like, cracking down on character moments the last two episodes, which is good because, I mean, Star Trek's always been about characters and the moments, but I just feel like they just rushed to the end and then were like, oh, it's all done. Magic. And I'm like, eh. I don't quite buy it. It was really good and really enjoyable, fun to watch episode. I loved seeing Michelle Yeoh being Emperor Giorgio and all the crazy stuff she was doing. She is just delightful to watch, and I hope we see more of her in upcoming seasons.
I think we will, right, for sure.
What about you, Aaron? Your non-spoiler takeaways. That was probably the longest non-spoiler takeaway I've had.
Yeah, I'm kind of on the same boat. I think the way this episode wrapped up the season kind of felt a little too fast at the end, but it's definitely a wonderful episode. It's beautiful to look at. There's a lot of things happening in this, and there's a lot of I don't want to say Easter eggs, but little hidden treasures, Star Trek treasures, you know, peppered in.
Oh yeah. There's a cameo that I spent like 5 minutes talking about when I was watching it. I was like, that's the guy. He's in the original series, and he was in that.
Don't go any further because you don't want to spoil it because it's not spoilers. But it's pretty cool. So very fun episode for sure. But I just feel like it was a little rushed for this to be the final episode, but of season one, and to just see this whole story arc wrapped up so quickly. But that's just my feeling. Why don't we go into full spoilers? So.
Let's do it. Spoiler alert going forward.
We can go into everything. So if you haven't seen episode 15, Will You Take My Hand, of Star Trek Discovery, turn this episode off now, this podcast off now. If you have seen it and you want to listen along, or if you just don't care about spoilers, by all means, keep listening. So here we go. This is Will You Take My Hand, season 1, episode 15, which is aired February 11, 2018. So, we start off with the Klingon fleet approaching Earth, but Discovery is approaching Kronos. And
these were some of the best shots of ships we've seen in the entire series.
Yeah, weren't they?
There was lights on them. Mm-hmm. Like, this was beautiful. Like, we got a beauty shot of Discovery just kind of flying by. Like almost like we see of, like, Next Gen of just, like, the Enterprise flying by. It was great.
Yeah, I agree, and as funny as I was thinking, like, have I been watching too much Truck Yards now that I'm, like, getting into ship porn? I mean, is that, like, you know, is my brain getting warped, or was just a really good scene, so?
It was a really good scene, but, I mean, I was always in the ship porn before Truck Yards. Truck Yards just kind of amps up the need. It got me hungry like the ship pornists.
Yeah. We're doing some shameless plugging for Trek Yards. But here we go. So we get this crazy exchange with Captain or Emperor Giorgio, and her old habits are coming out of how she used to treat everybody. She's kind of like barking and snipping at all her crew. Like, I didn't ask for that. I didn't, you know, you go
I
back to your
say
station.
You could do that.
Yeah. And
micromanaging. Man.
Oh, she's a micromanager, and there's a point where she says something to Saru, basically like about Kelpians being tough who get scared too often.
Unpalatable. Oh, man. There's two food chain references in this episode, which is fantastic.
Yeah, and Michael,
I just wish all three of them were in the room at the same time. That would have made it better.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. But Michael Berman basically just puts out and said, like, well, I don't recall that saying in your homeland. I did visit it with you.
What was it called?
And so Giorgio then says, well, let's take a quick walk.
Well, this gave me, like, flashbacks to the very first episode and all the weird banter that they had on the Shinzo between everyone. Except instead of friendly banter, it was angry banter. But it just... And that's what kind of put me out of it back in the original episode, where it was just kind of like they're doing all this banter. It almost felt like Orville a little bit, where they're kind of bantering on the bridge.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but the banter is obviously...
angry banter.
Yeah, it's like one of those conversations where you keep on, like, you're hearing it and you keep on cringing, like, I don't want to be in that conversation.
And Michael's Giorgio, like, yeah, like, Kelpian's pretty succulent if it's not tough. Oh, wait, no, she didn't, but
yeah,
she
I know.
In her heart of hearts.
But, so Giorgio and Michael Berman take a walk down the halls, and she's basically like, you better knock off that shit. And he says, you're blowing your cover. And she's like, you better not blow my cover. So there's kind of like they're at a draw of, you know, who's going to blow whose cover and stop acting like basically, Michael's telling her, stop acting like an asshole.
And Emperor threatens to throw her in the brig again. Man, Michael cannot escape the brig from Giorgio for anything.
I know. So, but then Michael, you know, basically goes, look, what is the real plan? What are we really doing here?
Grabs her elbow. Don't do that again.
If you ever do that again, I'll break your arm. So Giorgio says that her knowledge is the only thing that the Federation gives the Federation a fighting chance to fight to stop the Klingons and before they destroy Earth. The strange thing is that we already can tell that Michael has a huge problem with Giorgio being in charge. And just like we alluded to in our last podcast, how we were saying just like this just doesn't feel right, and that the Federation would put her in charge seems really ridiculous.
Yeah.
So next we have Giorgio and Michael. They pay Laurel a visit in the brig, and Laurel's surprised to see Giorgio, seeing say, hey, we ate you, and you didn't taste so good.
It's like, the one thing I can tell is that you need more seasoning.
Yeah. So
she's Asian.
She's got all the seasoning.
Do you know? They've got some very good seasonings over in Asia.
Oh, man, they're the best. And so Giorgio wants to know Laurel to what is the best place to put their landing party. And Laurel just like, forget it. I'm not telling you anything. This is, you know, this is war. You're not going to get anything from me. So Giorgio goes in the cell and basically just starts beating the shit out of Laurel.
And Laurel likes it.
I don't know if she likes it, but she definitely she's willing to go toe-to-toe for a while. And then it just isn't working because obviously Giorgio has the upper hand that she can shock her and, you know, and keep Laurel kind of like docile while she just beats the shit out of her. So
she only shocked her for the entrance into the bay.
Yeah, but got enough jump on her. And then and Laurel makes a comment basically saying, you've already lost. So but she won't tell anything. And
Michael's like, there's another way.
There's another guy I know.
I know a guy.
So,
he tried to kill me once after fucking me.
Yeah.
Multiple times.
Boyfriends will do that. So Ash Tyler, they go to Ash Tyler's quarters and he's tying knots in his room.
Klingon breakups are rough.
Yeah, they are. So he's listening to his emo music and tying knots. That doesn't sound ominous. I don't know what does, but so he is sitting there talking.
Giorgio keeps calling him an it.
Yeah. Sadly,
he's completely neutered.
Yeah, sadly, Michael basically says that Tyler has all the memories. He can help us with Kronos and this Kronos assault, and he agrees. And so they go to like a strategy room, and they sit there talking about how they can basically penetrate the cave systems, which are the best cave systems to go. And basically there's this one spot which happens to be a cave system that's beneath an Orion embassy. And there happens to be this strange old religion that was like lost years ago, and it's been abandoned, but they used to worship down in those caves for a while. So, and he
says, because they mentioned how a millennia ago Kalis killed them, and then like I guess those are the Kalis killed the gods that they were talking about, and whenever
right.
Worf said we killed our gods.
Well, and then next that's the designated spot they're going to. So they're going to go to this Orion embassy that's on Kronos. That's stationed above or built above this cave system. But Giorgio wants to bring one more person onto the landing party, and that has to be Cadet Tilly.
Oh, this is such a great scene. It's so great.
And Tilly is not the same person that Giorgio wants, and it's pretty strange that she wants Tilly to carry this mapping probe. And later we find out, I think the reason why she picked Tilly, but it's pretty insane that she brought her into the mix. And
but
Tilly,
I just love how like she's like, oh, the fun we had together, how we conquered the Betazoids and all that stuff like that. And then like I love how Tilly does like a Klingon like chest bump and like puts her hand out. I was like, or like a Hitler. It was really funny.
Yeah.
It was like the chest bump hand out. I was like, and Michael's like, don't do that.
Right. Yeah.
I just love that little moment that Tilly did. Oh, beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
No, it was really funny, and even Giorgio makes fun of Tilly's hair being curly. Because this is horrible. And she goes, I know.
I know. She's like so star. Like she knows that like she's not the real Giorgio. She's like, I know. Because like, I guess she liked her Killy look. I don't know.
Well, you notice she changed her hair when she got down there.
Immediately. Like, I'm like, how did they have time for her to fix her hair? Like, I mean, it's going to take a long time. I mean, I guess they have like better technology, but it just seems like straightening that hair is a long process, I would imagine.
It's the future. So Saru goes on to Black Alert in order to stamp.
I want to see him work his magic.
I know.
There's got to be a Bullion on that ship somewhere.
It would be cool if we did see a Bullion barber or hairstylist. So Saru goes to Black Alert and orders Stamets to jump inside the caves of Kronos. And the jump seems to put some kind of stress on Discovery, but it does seem to manage. I did think at it for a second it was going to crash into the cave.
Well, I think so, too. Like, it didn't drop nearly as far this time as it normally drops. It barely dropped at all. I'm like, why does it drop all the other times? There's no reason for it to drop.
maybe they compensated. They knew that was going to happen right away. So
yeah, like first thrusters.
Yeah, Prevostos hit up like 30 times on the data pad.
Well, at least we know Demure is a good pilot.
Yeah, at least we got that. Maybe.
Unless so, the other lady is a pilot, I'm not really sure.
I don't know anybody. I don't know what anybody does on that ship. So then a landing party with Captain Giorgio, Michael, Tyler, and Tilly.
Oh, to Giorgio, she's Kelly.
Yes, she is. And they beam to the area where the Orion embassy is.
I love this shot because it looks a lot like the matte painting you always see in TNG when they go to Kronos.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The style of that building looks just like it, even though it's like, you know, rendered a lot better. There's a lot more detail and stuff around, but that building just looked right out of like next gen, but just so much better. I was like, that was cool.
No, it was, and the whole like a sequence of them walking through this Orion encampment and this, I don't know what you want to call it, bazaar, where they're selling all sorts of trinkets and food and
sex.
And yeah, I mean, it was really, really cool. I even think one of the things cooking, it looked like the SETI Alpha 5 eels were cooking there for a second. I thought I saw in a pan.
I didn't even notice that, no. But
It might not have been, but it looked really darn like one of them. So.
But they are cooking space whale.
Yeah, which was interesting.
That was awesome. Kelly's like, it's delicious.
So we get this really strange thing where while they're walking through, they get they offer a weapons trade with an Orion, and they're going through this thing. I don't know. The Orion just automatically says, hey, you're Federation or you're Starfleet. And they start offering, hey, we got weapons. And
they're dressed a lot like Kirk and company were in Into Darkness.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And Tilly says that she's hungry and asks Berman to come with her. And while they're eating the space whale, that they have no idea what they're eating at the moment, Tilly asks, like, what is Giorgio up to? And Berman's like, I have no idea, but we just have to watch her like a hawk. And Tilly then says that to Michael that she has her back. And we did see a quick sequence while they're walking down the hallway. Ash Tyler's talking to Michael for a second, and Tilly kind of pushes herself in between, kind of like
she's trying to be a good bestie.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, you know, get away from my girl.
She's like, you're mine.
yeah, probably.
Quit checking her out. Killy's going in for the move.
So, there's this fight that breaks out, like out of this like tent or club or whatever that's going on, and Giorgio puts up and says, "We're not here for bread and circuses," which is a reference to the original series Star Trek, and she decides that they're going to pay a visit to one of the Orion circuses, which is basically a strip club.
It's literally a sex club. I totally called it. Like, when I'm like, why do they have time to go to a sex club? Like last week when I was talking about the preview.
Yeah, you know, they definitely did. And, you know,
because that's what the entire episode's about, being at the sex club, apparently.
Well, what's even stranger is, you know, here we have the fate of the Earth and the whole Federation, Starfleet, and there you have time to have sex, as usual.
And Giorgio, she has a nice threesome with a man and Lady Orion.
Right, right. So
and
Giorgio,
she was so good, they almost didn't even want a pair.
Yeah,
have
yeah,
her
right.
pay them. I mean,
so Giorgio is basically she wants some mean time or some executive time with her with some Orion suitors.
We should split up.
And
everyone
she says,
has sex with different people.
And next, they Ash Tyler and Michael Vernon go to a gambling game, and he says, "I remember Vok was good at this game, and he always felt the numbers were in his favor." So he says that I can try to see if these Klingons know anything about these caverns that are underneath this underneath the embassy. So we see Ash Tyler jump into the role of Vok, and he's very good at it. And he gets right in the Klingons' faces. He's not like, scared.
He's like punching them and hitting them, and like it's great. It's a great scene. I love the seeing Klingon culture come out, and it was a lot of fun watching this.
Yeah, no, he was definitely in full Vok mode, but this makes Michael really uneasy, and she takes off.
She doesn't like the sound of Klingon laughter.
I don't think so, no. Next we get Tilly is still hanging out in the CD club when a man who is Clint Howard, who was in the original series Corbinite Maneuver, who played Bolok.
Stranya.
Yeah. He, Clint Howard, which is a the brother of Ron Howard. Right. He was also in.
He was in the Deep Space Nine two-parter.
Yeah, the
Sanctuary the one District.
Sanctuary
District.
Yeah, yeah. Right, right. Sanctuary District. Thank you. So, this is his third, or maybe, technically third series he's been a part of. So,
what was he in Enterprise too? At some point, I want to say.
I don't remember him in Enterprise, but. He could have been.
He could have been. Like it's just he's, but it's just so great. I was like, yes, it's him. It's him. I was like, he was in DS9. He was in the original series. That's so great. I was so happy that he got to be in Star Trek again.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. So Clint Howard's character is this Orion, and he's sniffing some kind of weird.
Volcanic ash apparently gets you high on Kronos.
Yeah, so he's sniffing it, and he's trying to convince Tilly to sniff it with him. And she's like, no, I shouldn't. And then he's like, well, you know, he starts making trouble for her. And then he's like, okay, I'll sniff it. And she sniffs it, and she passes out immediately.
She's like, did I get enough?
Yeah. So then we go back to Tyler is with Vernon, and she's like I said, she walked away from the game, and when Tyler returns, he says those guys didn't know anything; they were just you know, just there for the game, obviously. But Michael said that Michael basically said I start feeling uncomfortable there, and she reveals to Tyler what actually happens with her parents. So we get a full disclosure of what happened to Michael Vernon's parents, of how they were going on vacation and Michael wanted to see this sun go supernova, and that's when the Klingons attacked, and they were hiding in the kitchen, and the Klingons broke into the kitchen, killed her father, and then took a long time killing her mother.
I think that implies rape, maybe.
Rape and probably just a gruesome, grisly murder.
Oh, and not to mention Lorca's, jab about having the wrong number of parts. We did see a Klingon peeing in the alley with two separate streams.
Yeah, we did see that. I saw that too. I was like, okay.
So I wonder if Worf had like a really extreme circumcision whenever he was taken in by human parents, and they're like, "Oh, he's deformed. We gotta fix him."
I don't know, but it just goes to prove that they have double their organs, like we've been saying. So
two arms and two heads and four legs, and
that's not double organs. Those are just different limbs. So your theory was right a long time ago.
Poor Deanna. No wonder she broke up with Worf so quick. She couldn't handle two. But Jadzia, she's kinky enough to be like, yeah, give it to me.
Yeah, right, right. So you were right. A long time ago, you were right. So, basically what we get into is that she witnessed the grisly murder of her parents. And
so is that why Tom's into B'Elanna? Does she have to?
I don't know how that works, because she's half human, half Klingon. So,
does she have one and a half?
I don't even know.
Well, because she wanted to get all the redundant organs removed from her daughter. So apparently the Klingon physiology is dominant in a Klingon-human relation. Because she made that whole episode where she was like, I want my daughter to be human. I don't want her to be Klingon. I don't want her to have, extra organs and stuff like that. I want her to be normal, quote unquote.
Right. Well, anyways, going back to the grisly murder of Michael Burns'
parents.
Oh, yeah,
sorry.
Instead of talking about sex organs, she basically brings out that that's why she hated, she was, so uncomfortable with, the Klingons and everything that she saw with Ash Tyler.
They sat around a dinner table, ate dinner, and laughed.
Right, exactly. So, but while she's telling that, Ash Tyler sees two Klingons and they're doing some kind of ritual out at a table, and he goes, that's a ritual that would be reminiscent of that religion that we're talking about that went extinct for all those years ago. So they might know something. So I'm going to go talk to them.
It's kind of like they're drinking to lost comrades, but they're putting the drinks that are not being used on fire, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, right, right, for sure. So next we get a scene of Georgiou after her little time with her menage a trois with the dancers. She puts a gun to one of them and demands to know about the shrine of this old forgotten religion. And apparently she must get some information.
And then Tilly wakes up and Clint Howard is trying to saw off her briefcase.
Yes. And
it's like, I'm an Orion. It's kind of what I do.
Yeah, it's what I do. It's my nature.
And she's like, what was that? And my mouth tastes like ash and ash and dirt. And he's like, yeah, it's volcanic ash.
That's exactly what it is. So she goes, he brings up that there are still active volcanoes still underneath the surface of Kronos, where she thought they were inactive. And when Tilly opens the probe, she finds out it's a hydro bomb. And the idea is that if the hydro bomb goes off, the ash from the volcanoes will just basically plume out of Kronos, and it will just wipe out the whole civilization of Kronos, and nobody will live.
It'll render it uninhabitable. She says later on that they give some time to escape, but it renders the planet useless.
Right. Right, exactly. So,
it was a Death Star plan, like you were saying last week. You called that really well.
Yeah, well, it seemed like that's what they were doing. I didn't know exactly how they were going to do it. I thought they were kind of going to fly the ship and fire their torpedoes into the core or something.
It's just exactly the opposite of what they were doing in Into Darkness at the beginning on the planet. Instead of a cold fusion device, they're doing a, let's make that thing go off quicker.
Yeah, exactly.
Lots of Into Darkness kind of tributes in this episode.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of feel towards
that. The opposite volcano thing, and then their clothes are very reminiscent of going in disguise on Kronos, just wear lots of black leather.
Yeah, right, exactly. So once Tilly finds this out, she makes a call to Michael, and when she's doing that, Georgiou sneaks up on her and basically takes her out. So, but Michael gets the gist enough that she knows exactly what's going to happen.
So she calls Saru.
So Saru, well, they basically go to, she beams back up to Discovery, and she has a quite strong conversation with Admiral Cornwell, and basically saying so you're just going to commit genocide? That's your plan here?
I love how the communications work all the way from inside of Kronos.
Well, it's subspace, so.
And nobody knows. No one detects it on. Why is there a Federation subspace signal inside our planet?
I don't know. Yeah, that's a good point. But But Michael Burnham believes that she knows that what they're doing wrong, and she's kept it a secret.
Do you want another mutiny on your hands, bitch?
And she says, like, you know, before when I broke the rules and I started that mutiny, I thought that if I broke the rules, that I was doing it for all the right reasons, and it would, you know, all basically come out in the wash. And he was like, I was wrong. That's not how we define ourselves. That's not what makes us. If we keep with the rules and we work with what defines us, our principles, that's what makes us better. So
we finally come full circle on the Michael Burnham mutiny thing. Yeah. Which I still don't think she was wrong in the original episode.
She mutinied.
I mean, she mutinied, but I mean, I don't think her call was wrong. I think she should have, like I said back in that episode, if she would have taken that entire conversation with Giorgio into the ready room instead of fighting her in front of everyone, I think she would have been a lot more receptive to it versus, you know, in front of everybody. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Right,
like,
'cause
they're confidants, they're best friends, mentor, mentee. Like that insubordination in front of everybody. Giorgio had to hold her ground. You know what I mean?
Sure, absolutely.
In private, they could have come to an understanding, and you know, either Michael would have won her over or Giorgio would have won her over. But that fight in front of the entire bridge crew just worked against her.
Right. So.
So I mean, I don't think she was wrong in practice because the Vulcans are the Vulcan hello. I mean, that was the whole point of that episode. You know, and
yeah.
It worked for Vulcans, so it worked for them. But like. Just now that it's genocide and not just one ship, she's like, oh, well, we can't compromise our morals now.
Yeah, no, I agree, and that's, we understand the reasons why she did things. I think she could have done it a little better, but she was obviously
think she was in the right. She did it the wrong way, but she had the right way of thinking.
Right. That's what I mean. I think she was just impetuous, and she jumped too many. I think if she would have pulled Giorgio aside and said, I think we need to rethink this or something, maybe it would have been a little different. I don't know, but
it would have absolutely been different. But they had to make this plot point, and they had to like bring it back to that, which I don't think this is on the same scale. You know what I mean? Like they're trying to make it about Michael, so they're trying to bring it up to the same scale. But really, genocide and like one ship, that's not a biggie. I mean, Vulcans do it. They're part of the Federation. Every time a Vulcan runs into a Klingon ship, they shoot him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's. I don't see how they didn't know that, you know, since they're in the same United Federation of Planets.
I know.
Like, when Vulcan Holo is secret, that doesn't make a lot of sense, but you know.
I know, I get it. But Michael makes her, you know, makes her impassioned speech, and then Saru stands up and says, "We're Starfleet. We don't do that."
And the whole bridge crew stands up. We are Starfleet. Even Demure, who had her eye messed up, she's like, "Yes, I'll stand up and mutiny with you, Michael. If we have to."
Right. So they basically defy Cornwell, but Cornwell's like, okay, we gotta see, you better figure this out then. I don't know what you're gonna do.
What's your plan then?
So unfortunately, we find that Giorgio has already released the probe with the bomb into the volcanic system, and it's slowly making its way through the caverns. By the time Burnham finds Giorgio in the shrine deep underground, she basically said the plans change, but Giorgio doesn't seem to care, and she offers an alliance with so that they can both work to, you know, take over the Klingon and the Federation. But you know, Burnham just offers Giorgio the freedom. You know, he says, you can go, you're free to go. And just give me the detonator and everything's fine. But Giorgio says, no way. And
Michael's like, you have to shoot me then.
Yeah.
Come on, do it.
You've already seen me die once. And it's, and then she also said that, you know, look, you can kill me, but you'll just be hunted. You'll be hunted by the Federation for the rest of your life. So
I'm not scared of the Federation.
Yeah, well, it doesn't seem. I mean, she could have beef hunted for the rest of her life, or not be hunted and be all right. So Michael calls Giorgio's bluff, and then but Giorgio agrees to turn over the detonator, and then she calls in Tyler, and behind Tyler in tow is Laurel, and they go into the shrine, and basically they give the bomb to Laurel with the detonator, and say, "Look, we're going to give you this bomb, and you can leverage it to take over the Empire and change it however you like. And then Giorgio takes off. It's a strange thing is that Tyler says to Laurel, is that, hey, you know, Vok always thought that you... You know, he trusted you. He thought you had a lot to offer, and he thinks that you could be a good leader. And Laurel's kind of like shocked by all this. So, and then we get the next in the Orion city encampment or whatever. We have Tyler and Michael Byrne saying goodbye, and Tyler's going with Laurel. And as they say goodbye, they hug and kiss, and they kind of have a little moment.
And Michael's like, I don't see Vok, I just see you, Ash. Like, that was a quick turnaround.
That was, but, you know, people say things in anger and sometimes, but there was, it was a very, very well, touching and very well acted scene. So,
they have great chemistry together. Shahzad Latif and Sequoia Green, or Sonequa Green, they are great together.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was very good. So, but they're getting split up and then Michael beams back to Discovery.
Which I didn't really see coming, but there's not really any use for him. I mean, they can't.
Other than the estranged boyfriend.
Yeah, and then in season two, he'd basically, you know, be in a lab being prodded. So he's like, yeah, I'm going to just hang out with the Klingons. I can just gamble the rest of my life. It'll be okay.
Right, right. So next we get a scene of Laurel making her case that they should unite the empires of all the great houses, and she wants to make herself the new leader. And the Klingons
laughs at her,
and then she shows the detonator because she's holding a thermal detonator.
Oh my goodness! C-3PO raises both of his arms, and R2-D2 squeals. Oh wait,
yeah, no. and this is the reunification of their race.
I did like that one Klingon to the right hand side. He had like a traditional looking Klingon outfit. It was different, but it was more in line with how they look in TNG, like with that shoulder pad.
Gotcha.
Like I think he was in the upper right. Whenever they showed the three guys in the middle.
Right, right. So all the Klingon ships leave Earth.
They just hung out for the entire episode. It's like, oh, I guess we'll leave now.
Yeah, and so they take off, and basically we're told that all the other systems have been freed as well. And then we go back to Earth. We're in Paris, and we see Amanda Grayson, Sarek's wife, and you know, Michael's adopted mother, and they're talking, and Burnham says that she remembers that she always, that her mother always told her not to forget her humanity, and that she says she finally understands. Next week, Sarek joins them, and he says he wants to speak with Michael, and Sarek admits that he had the part of the plan to destroy Kronos, and tells her that her record has been cleared, and her mutiny has been pardoned, and her rank of commander is reinstated, and Discovery is going to get a new captain.
On Vulcan!
Yeah, so...
Vulcan to pick up the new captain. That was a strange thought to me. Are we getting a Vulcan captain?
Cybok.
Yes, Cybok. His brief stint in Starfleet. Oh, that would be great. I want to see Cybok now.
The wacky adventure to Cybok.
Now that you put that in my head, there'll be an episode where he trains a space horse to fly in space, so he could like get to Nimbus 3 one day.
Oh yeah, it'll be like My Little Pony in space. So, and then we get this speech in Starfleet commands, and Burnham's giving the speech during the medal ceremony, and Tilly's been accepted into
the
command division, right? And
but it looks like they gave her an engineer badge, wasn't it? And wasn't it bronze with like the E on it?
You know, I couldn't really see from, you know, when I was watching. I don't think I was paying attention, but
it didn't look gold like a command one.
But she's definitely put into the Starfleet program.
Yeah.
She might be command with engineering focus. Background. Yeah, yeah.
Well, just command should have been like the gold with like the star instead of like the E. But I don't know. Maybe she's got to race through that before she can get her gold.
Sure. And then we get the Discovery. It's en route to Vulcan to get their new captain, and they're going to travel by warp instead of going to this by the Spore Drive.
And Steven says something about, oh, we're looking for a non-human interface for the Spore Drive. I'm like, they're still working on the Spore Drive stuff. Yeah. Really, guys?
I guess. And then they receive a distress call while they're in warp en route to Vulcan, and it's the Enterprise. And the Enterprise appears on screen, and it's commanded by Captain Pike. And then as they come face-to-face, this is where the show ends. So we kind of know that the Enterprise is going to be into Season 2.
Yeah, I really, if they don't pick up right here, I'm going to be pissed.
I think they will. It has to, or at least they'll come pretty close to it. So,
because it's kind of like for the person whose first Star Trek show is Discovery, it's not really a cliffhanger. But for everyone who was raised with Kirk and, you know, fan of the original series and the movies, it's kind of a cliffhanger for us, sort of, because it's like, oh, it's right. Enterprise. What's going to happen? You know, right. So it's exciting for us. For people who are new, I don't know how they would feel. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no doubt. So, Dave, this is the wrap of Season 1. What do you think of the episode, Will You Take My Hand?
I don't know if I will. It was a lot of fun. The episode, they had lots of great character moments, and I still stand by what I was saying last week, where I was like, I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know how they're going to end the war. Like, even if they take Kronos hostage, it doesn't mean anything. Of course it does in the show, because everyone just turns tail, they give up all their systems. And I just, like, the Klingons have an empire. There are 24 Klingon houses. Only a tiny fraction of them probably even remotely call Kronos home.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that's what they were going for, with 24 Klingon houses and none of them having hair and all of them having very different ways of dress, that they maybe probably live on different planets. It is an empire, after all. It's not just Kronos. So, mm-hmm.
The only thing I would say with a rebuttal to that argument is that, you know, Klingons want to show their strength by force and their honor, and having their home world destroyed would be pretty awful and dishonorable. So that might be give them pause to rethink what they're doing.
But still, like, they just gave up all their territory, all the territory that they said they took.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with that.
I mean, turning face on Earth, it's hard to buy. It's super hard to buy. But, like, sure. But then just, like, oh, we're leaving everything that they conquered? I'm just like, really? It just doesn't make... It makes no sense. I mean, like, especially some of the smaller houses who may not live on Kronos, it's like, this is mine now.
Like I said,
maybe some of the houses care. I just can't see all of them caring.
Especially if they're willing to, I mean, they're ready to do their final assault on Earth.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're right there. And then, like, I just don't understand how, like, the word could get to them fast enough to pull them back. You know what I mean?
I mean, I could see the word getting there fast enough. I don't see them going like, oh, well, you know, I guess I will listen.
Yeah, they're fractured. I mean, even if she's got a, like, they're like, oh, she's bluffing. You know, like, they're not there in the council chamber.
Yeah, how do you call it? It's like, what if I came to, like, you know, all the government, I went to the UN and said, I got a bomb, it's in the middle of the planet, it's going to blow everybody up. They'd be like, yeah, whatever, man, get out of here. You know, like, there's no way you can prove that.
Yeah, it's just, I don't buy the resolution of the war for a second. Like, yeah. I was calling, I was like, oh, look, they're finally going to do time travel. And nope, they didn't do time travel. I'm just like, but they just established the Spore Drive can do time travel a couple episodes ago. Like they're doing a terrible job with Chekhov's gun in this show. Like, they had the Tribble there. They never used the Tribble to any effect. There was no point to having the Tribble in the show. They don't look at the Tribble, which I kind of thought was disappointing. And then, you know, the Spore Drive can do time travel now. Why don't we use time travel to go back 9 months and fix the tide of the war, or go back to battle the binary stars and prevent it from happening at all? Because the whole war doesn't make sense in this time frame. But I don't know. It's just really odd. Like, just a lot of really odd decisions. And the show's been fun, and it's been really enjoyable. I feel like the writers are kind of like they're doing a fun story, but they're just throwing stuff in to throw it in without any real reason to.
Yeah.
It's just like, well, it can time travel. You can use time travel to fix things. Or you can, there's a triple. You can use the triple as a Klingon detector, even though nobody knows. I mean, apparently Federation's terrible at keeping records, because we never knew about a war 10 years before Kirk.
Right.
But, you know, like, record keeping seems to be bad in TOS era. So, it's just like some of the, like, things they're throwing in. They're just, like, trying to throw old fans a bone, but they don't really care how it contributes to the story. That's just kind of a couple things that bother me. But overall, this was a fun episode. Great character moments, great acting. Love Michelle Yeoh. Can't wait to see her in season 2. I love the redesign of the Constitution. I knew it couldn't look exactly like it did in TOS. It just wouldn't make sense because everything in Discovery is so detailed.
Mm-hmm.
It's so hyper detailed. Like, just the plain looking ship. The model in TOS just wouldn't make sense. And I honestly never bought the TOS ship being a refit in the motion picture, because the shape of everything was wrong. The secondary hull wasn't the same shape. The primary hull wasn't the same shape. The struts on the nacelles, nothing was the same shape.
Like, it did feel like a totally new ship. Yeah.
It felt like a completely new ship. I mean, it has the same basic shape, but all the detail was completely different. So this new ship is like a perfect, like, hyper-detailed version of the original Enterprise, but it looks more like it could turn into the motion picture ship versus how the original ship was. You know, like, the secondary hull looks a lot more in line with the motion picture refit. So all they would have to do is maybe change, like, the bridge module and the saucer struts, you know what I mean? And then, and then that would make a lot. And they only have to change a couple parts. Whereas in the original refit, they pretty much have to change everything. So how is it even the same ship?
Right.
So I really like what they do with the Constitution. It's a nice in between, and that works for me. What about you, Aaron?
Well, I mean, as a Constitution redesign, I'm going to have to just. I'm not going to say anything for now, just because I'm a little in between. I'm not saying they shouldn't have redesigned it. I'm not. That ship is so precious to me, and I hate the nacelles on the JJ ship. I always have. I just think they're too fat and ugly, and they never did anything for me. This looks a little sleeker, but still looks more modeled, I guess, is, you know, has like you said, more detailed. But it's going to take a while for me to process. That's, I think, is the long and short of it, you know.
But for this episode, what are your big takeaways?
I think I'm with you on most of everything. I liked this episode. I had fun watching this episode. I felt the war is over. Kind of all of a sudden felt like what, like. That so Laurel just says, I got a bomb, it's in the you know, it's going to blow the whole planet up if you don't give me control of everything. It's like, well, in what world does that work? You know, even on Kronos, it doesn't seem like that was possible.
I want to say, even in TNG time, they said there was never a woman on the high council.
Well, she doesn't have to be on high council, but she's, I mean, maybe she will be, but I don't know. Just, I don't know, it just seems seems like a too fast of jump. It seems like if she was going to garner the power or to reunify all the Klingons together, it just doesn't seem like that's she would have enough time.
That doesn't happen overnight.
Right, yeah.
Like, there's no way it could happen overnight. Like, even if it happened last episode, and there was, like, there still should be threats of war in different places, because, like, not everyone's going to fall. Klingons are always fighting amongst each other. I can't see them just being, oh, wait, we're going to go back to Kronos.
Yeah,
we're going to give up everything we conquered because we're Klingons, and that's what we do. Like, no, Klingons don't give up.
Yeah, that's the other. Well, I mean, that's the other side of it. But, I mean, is this what they considered a Velvet Revolution, where it's like the heads of states and stuff like that? That's where the revolution takes place. It doesn't take place on the street kind of thing. It takes place within the halls of the government instead of instead of an actual, like, you know, bloody revolution.
And Klingons are just generally assholes. In Star Trek V, Federation and Klingon Empire technically aren't at war. But Claw's like, oh, wouldn't it be great if I took down the Enterprise and took down Kirk just for reasons?
Yeah, I'm...
You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, Claw was just acting on his own, and he's just one guy. And there's 24 Klingon houses.
Mm-hmm,
like, I just can't see them unifying over, like, oh, Kronos is a bomb in it, maybe.
Right. I guess what it is that I do kind of see that there could be, like I said, that Velvet Revolution within the Klingon Empire. But that being said, it seems like it wouldn't happen right away. And, I mean, maybe we're not seeing the full picture. Maybe there was a bloody battle, en route to Earth. You know, like, you know, the Klingons were engaging with Starfleet. And there was heavy losses, and maybe because Starfleet finally had the algorithm to break their cloaking device that they can, you know, see through it. And so maybe there's more to that story than we know, you know, which, you know, okay, plausible, right? But it just seems too fast for Laurel to just say, I have control of everything, and I'm bringing the houses together. I don't know, whatever. I mean, just that's my feeling of it.
Again, this was a 45-minute episode with, like, a 5-minute recap.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
Like they're not taking advantage at all of being on an online platform where they can give us more scenes to make fill in more gaps, to make things make more sense. I was hoping this would be a longer episode. And it was 45 minutes with a 5-minute, like, oh, before on Star Trek Discovery.
Right.
I knew they were going to do, like, when I looked at the time immediately for the episode, as soon as I clicked play, I checked to see how what the time was on it, and I was like, yep, they're just going to, like, wrap this up with no real explanation.
I mean, there still might be a lot of, like, skirmishes with the Klingons, and who knows? I mean, we saw the map real briefly in the last couple episodes of how, you know, the Klingons had made their way into Federation territory. Who knows? Maybe that map redefined makes more sense now. Maybe, you know, the plans they took are now officially part of the Klingon Empire or will be part of the neutral zone.
Sure, maybe. I mean, I'd love to get a close look at some of the maps and kind of, you know, analyze them from that point of view.
I paused the map a couple times, and it's really hard to see.
I mean, you do have your whole stellar cartography maps.
Yeah, but from what they showed, it was very difficult to see what on that map what was actually happening. So, I mean, you can make out a few things, but you can't. It's really difficult. So, I had a hard time figuring that out. I did look into it this last week, but I couldn't see anything that was worth even mentioning. Also, the idea that Ash Tyler would walk away with Laurel. He seems like a Section 31, you know, wet dream. And that they'll just let him go, like, hey, just go ahead.
Yes, you know? The Section 31 thing, like, that was so disappointing that it never, ever got mentioned. We got the black badges in Episode 3, and never again. No mention of Section 31. I was like, I was hoping we'd at least get a mention. I mean, maybe Cornwell's part of Section 31. Who knows? I mean, for authorizing a nuclear strike to devastate all of Kronos.
Right.
It's possible she has a clearance. And that would make sense how she gave Lorca, like, the most powerful ship in the fleet. You know, if she's Section 31 and giving him that authority, you know?
Right.
Like, Section 31's got to be involved somewhere in the chain of command for Lorca. Since he was a Mirror Universe character, for him to be given that leeway, either his direct in command, you know, Cornwell was, or someone above her.
Right. Hey, you know, it's not that it's. I mean, maybe Ash Tyler is, you know, on the payroll to Section 31 now. I mean, we don't know. Maybe he was contacted, and we just don't know that story yet. Or maybe that's a hidden story that we'll never know. I don't know. It just it seemed like Michael letting the tardigrade go. she's letting, you know, Ash Tyler walk away. So,
you know, who knows? Maybe he could still be the albino from Blood Oath. I mean, maybe Laurel can turn him back. Maybe Laurel can restore Vok as the primary driver of the body. Mm-hmm. I mean, who knows? I mean, he's still alive, so. Maybe they can reverse the surgery. It's not out of the picture since they didn't kill him.
Yeah, right, right. No, I agree. But I just, you know, seems odd.
Yeah.
So there we are with all that. So I, like I said, there's. Oh, and a last little bit here for me. I didn't know if I was confused on the story, but how they were doing this. But when they're doing the medal ceremony, Michael Burnham's giving her a speech, and then they're giving the medals to all the crew members, but then Michael's still giving her speech. So it was
that was
like
cut very strangely.
So is that a cut, or where was Cornwell giving the medals while she was giving the speech? I'm like, was super confused. So
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I feel like
I'm hoping it was just really badly cut, and that's not how they actually give medals in the middle of a speech.
Yeah, because it felt so weird. Like, and she's like, that's the Federation. And then she gives another medal, and that's the Federation. And like, and then that's the Federation. I'm like, what? It's,
yeah.
Either way, it's very odd. If she says the same thing three times in the middle of her speech, and if they're handing them out during, it felt very strange. Like I said, like overall, this is a great episode. Like, I just have qualms with how they finished the war. I knew I was going to. Based on last episode, since they didn't do anything to move them toward that path last episode.
Right, right. You know what I think it is, Dave? I think, and to people who hear us and that we are critical on these things, or that we think that we're like shitting on Discovery, I think you're hearing us wrong. I think for what is it with me and Dave is that, and I'm speaking for you, Dave, sorry if I misspeak and tell me if I am, that we just care so goddamn much about Star Trek, and we want it to be like the best it possibly can be, and if we see like just a flaw, we're just like, wait a second. And it doesn't ruin it for us. I mean, maybe it sort of ruins it for us, but it definitely, we just want the best.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly my sentiments. Like, when I complain about Discovery, it's just because I want it to be better than it is, and I just want the absolute best for Star Trek, because it is such a good show. And if you want to hear me hate something, go back and listen to our episode on The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
There's me shitting on something, and I did not like that movie at all. There's only two scenes I liked in that movie, and they were like fight scenes. That was about it. And then everything. Yeah. So, I mean, like, with Discovery, I like Discovery. I enjoy Discovery a lot. I mean, there's only two episodes I really didn't like. And that would be probably The Wolf Inside and the previous episode to this one.
Right.
It's just kind of filler. They're not doing anything. They're not advancing the story. And part of the reason that I'm critical, because I do want it to be its best, is that I know it's a short season. I know we're only getting like 15 episodes. Next season could be even shorter, because they said this season was originally 13 episodes, and then they extended it to 15, because I guess they thought they needed to make, you know, the first part like a two-parter.
Right, right.
And so they needed to make things a little bit longer. Or they just didn't want to do long episodes for whatever reason. I don't know. But they decided to give us two extra episodes this season. So next season could be even shorter. And because I know the seasons are short, and I know they're trying to tell a story, and I know that the writers have said, well, this is the Klingon War season one, and then next season's not going to be the Klingon War anymore because we're wrapping that up, so there's no big cliffhanger. They kind of were saying things like this. And so they're setting expectations for me as a critic of Star Trek, as a lover of Star Trek. And so I'm trying to figure out how to reconcile with what they're saying to what they're showing us. And when they give us an episode that's nothing but like character moments, and they're not working on the overall story, I'm like, what's happening? There's only one episode left, and that's what gives me pause.
Yeah, yeah. No, I see that. And I guess in the end, I just felt that the Klingon War was just too quickly wrapped up, and we really didn't see much of it. Not that I need to see a ton of space battles myself, but even if they alluded to the space battles, like we should have seen, you know, like maybe flashes back to you know, the battle as the Klingons advance into the Earth territory, and like, you know, there's constant, you know, like them just in a bloody war between each other. That would have made me go like, okay, even if you showed it for like 20 seconds or 30 seconds or something like that, then we know that this is happening all while they're on Kronos.
Like the state of the war. And in film, there's a saying, show, don't tell. And Discovery does an awful lot of telling, and not an awful lot of showing in regards to the war. They kind of just gloss over things.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah, yeah, I don't know. So,
But I'm so happy that Star Trek's back on television. I'm excited for season two. I know we've got a long wait ahead of us, but we'll be researching and looking at news, looking at, you know, leaks and rumors, and we'll be, you know, when we see something, we'll probably be mentioning it in the news section for upcoming episodes. I mean,
absolutely, yeah, that's half the fun of it too.
Is, yeah, we're so excited.
Yeah, being the bloodhounds and smelling out all the little leads that we get from, you know, from whatever social media and what's been printed and what's not. So, at the very end, we got that last scene with the Enterprise. Any ideas what Christopher Pike could be having problems with on the Enterprise?
I don't know, because it's like, oh, there's a distress signal, and then they warp in, and then the Enterprise warps in too, and then they're face to face, and it's just like, well, what's going on? Like,
yeah,
that doesn't look like it's in trouble. The ship didn't look damaged.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. It's weird too, because I don't think they're yet. This is the hard part. I'm not quite sure what year they're supposed to be officially in right now when they come face to face.
I'm pretty sure the cage is pre Discovery.
Yeah,
pretty sure.
It's real difficult, so we don't know exactly when this takes place. So it might not be the cage time period, but it's got to be pretty close. And like you said, you were talking about the Enterprise, how it looks. I don't mind that they're revamping things. Like, I don't expect it to look like the original cage, you know, bridge set. I would think I'd be even let down if I saw that. If they made it look, you know, they had some callbacks on it, I'd be all right with that, you know, so.
Like, even if the inside of the bridge looks more like the motion picture bridge, that would be fine for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the bridge between TOS and TMP, it looks nothing. They don't look anything alike at all.
Oh, sure,
and they're supposed to
be
the same ship. And not only is it, they don't look the same, like, the TMP bridge is, like, easily double the size.
Right,
and so it's like, well, it's a completely different ship because the bridge module, like from the outside, doesn't look that much different.
You know what I mean? Right, yeah.
I mean, it's the scale of the rest of the ship. It's the scale of it on the outside doesn't look that much different. So I mean, you know, granted, it's the '60s; they had tight budget. You know, they did what they could. So it doesn't hurt my feelings at all that if everything is skewed toward a TMP, like internal style and external style, that would be fine for me. Because, I mean, it just makes more sense for it to look like maybe an older version of what the TMP would look like versus, you know, TOS exactly. Because TOS exactly is it was rough because it limited budget and the time.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense. Yeah, I mean, it was a different time period.
And it's still canon if it looks like TMP or like an older version of TMP. I mean, that would not cause me any issue at all.
I don't mind that they're going to revamp it. I don't know. I don't have an issue with that. I did see that they I put something on the Discovery. I'm not Discovery on the our Synthaholics page with Kirk in the uniform, you know, for Discovery.
Yeah.
And we got like a lot of thoughts on that. And somebody was talking about the books that have been released for Discovery and saying that the uniforms are different on the Constitution classes. At least that's been what's been said in the books.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I've heard as well, that the Constitutions are the only ones rocking the pajamas.
So we'll see if that's true. Like we said, we have about a year to wait. So, I mean, unless we get some release pictures or anything like that when they start filming.
I wonder who they're going to cast as Spock and Number One. And, like, I really, like, if they're going to go through the trouble of casting all these people, like, I really hope season two goes back and forth between Discovery and Enterprise. They're on some kind of joint mission. Like, that could be fun.
Yeah, no, it's going to be interesting to see how this works, how they play. I mean, because it's a distress call. So, I mean, what's going on with the Enterprise that has a distress call? Or maybe this is just the beginning of a story arc that just starts with Enterprise, and then they, you know, they move away from Enterprise from the plot after the story goes. So,
Sure, but like, you know, the original trailer for Discovery, they're like new, they're like, you know, new ships, new stories. So they were like a new character, you know, new captains, new ships. And so they're like, they're relying on the plural. So I mean, if they, so like season one was like a lot of back and forth between the Shenzo and the Discovery. Since they went to the Mirror Universe, you got to see the Discovery and the Shenzo. You get to see the Shenzo again. So, you know, they did keep that idea with the multiple ships. We get a lot of Shenzo, we get a lot of Discovery. So maybe next season we'll get a lot of Enterprise and a lot of that. And the thing is, if they're going to go through the trouble, see, that's why I'm scared we're not going to see the Enterprise at the beginning of season two. I'm scared they just did this as like a, you know, to get us excited, to get fans excited for it, and then they're not even going to really show it in season two. Because I think casting those people is going to be like a hell of a thing. Casting a Spock, casting a Pike, you know, getting all these people cast. That's going to be like a hell of a thing. And like, you know, they're going to want to get it right. And then for them just to show up in one episode or two episodes, it just seemed like, you know, almost kind of like a letdown.
I don't know. I mean, if it is Pike, if that's who we're seeing, which they say there was Pike. If it's Pike, I mean, you could just, you know, have some kind of, you know, good-looking, you know, handsome captain, same as, you know, first officer. And
you gotta have, like, scenes between Spock and Michael talking about how they grew up and, you know, shit like that. I mean,
would they get Zachary Quinto to come back?
I don't know if they could get Zachary Quinto.
You know, I saw he's doing In Search Of, so he's not, like, doing, like, a shitload of, like, crazy. I mean, he's, besides the Star Trek movies and Heroes, he's not doing that much.
Well, I mean, Heroes has been off the TV for a long time, but
no, that's where he made his, that's where he cut his teeth.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But, you know, he's not doing that much. So if he came on for, like, four or five episodes, I mean,
I wouldn't mind Zachary Quinto playing the role. I'm just not sure, since they're saying this is the prime timeline, I'm not sure if they want to, like, I know Zachary Quinto is supposed to be Spock because it's just a reboot and they need the younger actors to play it. But for people who hate the JJ-verse,
yeah, but
they might like get more butthurt.
Yeah, but if you think about it,
it would make perfect sense. I would love to see Zachary Quinto in the role of Spock. Honestly,
yeah, because I mean, think about it. He worked really hard to get that character down,
and Nimoy mentored him.
He looks
two of the films.
He looks a lot like him. He acts a lot like him. I mean, they did a really good job with casting him, and you know, he does have good acting skills. And, you know, here we have, like, Jason Isaacs, you know, and we have Michelle Yeoh. I mean, these are all big, you know, Hollywood actors as well.
Yeah.
I don't see any reason why he wouldn't sign on for a couple shows, you know. Like, what if it started off and, you know, they have him on for, like, you know, two or three episodes?
I would love that. I would love to see Zachary Quinto playing Spock.
I think we could see that. It's very possible. I don't think we'll see Kirk, and I don't. There's no reason for him to be on that ship.
Kirk's on the Farragut.
Farragut at this moment. Yeah, I mean, there's no reason. I just worry with Discovery because they do a lot of crazy shit, and sometimes you're like, why did you do that? You know. So.
Yeah.
We never know.
Yeah, I really hope we do see more of the Enterprise next season. I mean, like, why would they tease it if they're not gonna show it next season? Although they teased the Tribble and they teased time travel and they didn't use either of those things.
And so. The Defiant, we saw pictures of the Defiant, but we never actually saw the Defiant. Yeah.
So, yeah. Who knows?
It's going to be interesting, and we have basically almost a year from now. So
yeah, almost a year from now. Supposedly they're going to start shooting in April. I mean, if we get any more solid news on if that's happening or not, we will definitely let you know. But as far as I can tell from the little bit I've read, it looks like April is when they're going to start shooting, and that would probably give us like a January turnaround. Because, I mean, I think 9 months would be sooner than January, but I feel like being close to Thanksgiving, Christmas, they might as well just wait till January.
Yeah, right.
And then that way, maybe they could get it out even sooner next year. You know, I mean, for 2019. For 2020, maybe they get out the third season, like late 2019 instead of early 2020, if they do have that, like, gap.
Sure,
they've got extra time to, you know, get stuff written. If they get greenlit, but they may not even get greenlit until halfway through the season, which would push back it back even further.
Right.
So, like, I don't think the show's going to be on the regular. I feel like the show, like if this doesn't get greenlit like before it airs for a third season, they're going to be like, it's going to get staggered. So like the first season one, we got like late 2017. And then season two, we got early 2019. Then season three will be like mid 2020 or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It could get pushed back. Like it'll be sliding back further in the year every season, depending on how they decide they're going to renew it.
Yeah, I think it's all going to come down to what All Access's numbers are, and if they're turning a profit with it, and if it makes sense for them to keep it around. So.
Yeah, because that's the thing too. I mean, I wonder how they're going to react once. The mass exodus happens probably right now, that people are like, oh, it's over, and you kill All Access now.
Yep, exactly. So
we'll probably also be looking for news on what people are saying about All Access as well.
I'm really curious. I've been very curious about All Access's numbers. I hope we get some kind of release to their stockholders or somebody. So,
well, I mean, you know, it would be interesting if they see like a major drop. I really hope they announce a second Star Trek show so they can be like, well, so we can keep our Star Trek fans happy, we'll release two shows, and that way we could have like when Discovery goes off the air, we get the second one, and then when the second one goes off the air, we should only have a short wait for Discovery again, you know?
Yeah,
especially if they do mid-season breaks.
Yeah, I'd be down with that. That'd be cool. And hey, maybe they'll do one with just for Enterprise.
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know.
If they're gonna go through the trouble of casting that crew, that could be fun.
Yeah, for sure. It'd be cool to see that, see Pike's crew. So,
yeah, it's just interesting. Like, you know, after all the legal things with CBS, they got rid of, you know, Axanar because Axanar was doing a Klingon War. Discovery kind of did Klingon War. I'm still really hesitant to call season one of Discovery a Klingon War season because, like I said, they did everything they could not to show it. And then, you know, Captain Pike, very early on, we talked with Todd Chantay about, you know, his fan project about doing Captain Pike. And then, lo and behold, Captain Pike's on the Enterprise, and they run into Discovery at the very end of this show. So I'm like, it's just kind of funny that maybe CBS is trying to, like, do, like, all this nostalgia stuff because of the all these fan films.
Well, I mean, they're not wrong to dip into all those things that people are interested in, so...
Well, not that Captain Pike did all that great. They didn't make their funding whenever they did their Indiegogo, so... Eh.
Right. Yeah, well, whatever. They tried, and, I mean, they did have people, you know, lined up for it, so...
Sure, yeah, but, yeah, unfortunately, it never panned out, and I haven't heard anything from Todd in a long time, so...
And, what's his name, Roberts, the guy who was going to play the captain, didn't even remember he did that. So
didn't even remember he agreed to be a part of it. So, yeah, that's a good sign.
Yeah, right. So, anything else we want to talk about for Will You Take My Hand?
No, it was a fun episode. I was really surprised it didn't land on a bigger cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's kind of how Star Trek does their seasons. Usually the first season's never really a cliffhanger. Usually it's like a second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth season where they do like the cliffhanger ending and then they pick it up in the next one. So since we didn't get a big cliffhanger this time, I'm thinking next time's going to be a big cliffhanger. And like I said, like this episode's cliffhangerness depends on how much of a fan you are, I think. Like, if you're a big fan of Kirk and the Enterprise and Pike and the Enterprise, I think it's a bigger cliffhanger for them than for people who are brand new to Discovery. Because I actually got a text from my coworker, and he was asking, did it end on a cliffhanger? And I'm like, I don't know, because he's not really a Star Trek fan. So, I mean, for him, it may not be a cliffhanger.
Right. Sure.
I mean, did you feel like it was a cliffhanger?
I was excited to see it, and I was wondering what it's about, but it's not like, you know... Best of Both Worlds or anything like that, or not Best of Both Worlds.
Best of Both Worlds is a good one. Or
yeah, I'm just, you know, it's thinking about the, you know, like that cliffhanger. You're like, oh wow, you know, what's going to happen? It's more of just like, oh, this is going to be interesting kind of thing. So
yeah, that's what I'm thinking. It's interesting, and I hope they pick up with it. I hope it's not like a red herring where they're just going to go do something else at the beginning of next season.
Right.
So It'll be cool, fun, man, to see what's going on. So I'm really excited. I'm really excited about next week talking with the Trekyards guys about Discovery as a whole. And it'll be great to have a conversation with them and their thoughts and feelings on it.
Yeah, I agree. I'm excited what they have to say. And I'm also, you know, I want to sit back this week and process the whole season and what I think about everything.
Yeah, because every time we do one of these episodes, these are immediate reactions. Like, we just finished watching the episode, like, an hour and a half, 2 hours ago. Like, these are as immediate thoughts as we've got. And, you know, maybe that's why some of you think we sound more critical and that we don't like the show. We do. We're just, like, we're just soaked our heads in it, and then we're just, like, trying to, like, first reactions, and then to, you know, be critical in the way that we can. We don't want to just be like, oh my god, everything was perfect, because nothing's ever perfect.
Nothing's perfect, and like we said, it's near and dear to our hearts, so you can't, we're always going to be, like, worried. You know, it's like that child, you know, you're always worried that the child is going to be all right, or you're always like, is Star Trek going to be all right? So
yeah, that's the thing. We're worried about it. We just want it to be good. And, you know, they did some really good stuff, and, you know, a lot of people were down on it that it was big and heavy and war. And I think what they did was they proved people wrong. They, in the last couple episodes, they went really character heavy, and that's a very Star Trek thing to do.
Yeah, and I was very happy at the very end that, you know, Michael stood up and said, this is not our principles. And I was like, thank God somebody finally said something like that. You know, it's like, it took them a while to get their legs.
Yeah, and they did some very great Star Trek feeling things. Like, so that's great, and we really enjoy it for that. But, like, it's just the overall narrative that it's kind of hard to buy sometimes.
Yeah,
and that's some of our issues. But overall, Discovery's great. It's by far the best first season of Star Trek I think I've ever seen. It was fun and exciting, well produced, well made, well acted, well directed. You know, some of the character moments are extremely well written, like the scene between Culber and Stamets in the mycelial network. That was so well written. So, I mean, right. You know, sometimes I hate being down on the writers because, like, some parts are just so brilliant. But, like, some of the overall beats just don't make sense to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I wonder if next season will be less arc-driven so that it can be more enjoyable. Because I feel like they're doing great character work. Just the arc just doesn't... Just, to me, the arc didn't work.
Well, maybe too, we'll have multiple arcs where we start one storyline and then we jump into another storyline until we get to the end of the season. You know, because, like, if you take even, like, you know, Game of Thrones or Walking Dead, it's never just, like, just one thing. It's, like, a lot of multiple things happening. So maybe we'll see a little bit of that. So,
yeah, like, lots of intrigue. That'd be fun to see Star Trek with some little more political intrigue. Because I was really hoping we'd see that with the Klingons, and they kind of glossed over a lot of it.
Well, we got a lot. I wouldn't say we didn't get any. I think we got a lot. I mean, with
we got a little bit with Cole, but I mean,
yeah, I think we got enough as that we could handle. Sure. I mean, they could have gone heavier, but I mean, let's face it. I mean, it's like, I think if you've had too much Klingon, people start really getting, like, weirded out. So,
like Michael, like, oh my god, they did horrible things to my parents.
Yeah, exactly. right.
Cool.
Okay.
Well, yeah. Will you take my hand? And I think on second thought, I will take your hand. This was fun, and I can't wait to see what's to come.
Yeah, me too. And like I said, from the conception when we first heard that this show was going to happen, and until tonight. I mean, as we're recording this, I mean, pretty freaking amazing.
Yeah, and you know, in some ways, it exceeded my expectations on you know, the casting and how well some of those things worked, like Michelle Yeoh and Jason Isaacs, just brilliant casting. I never seen Shazad Latif in anything, and I think he was absolutely amazing. So, and Mary Chifo as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I love Tilly. She's probably one of my favorite character behind Lorca. So
right.
I mean, they've done a great job putting the show together. I can't wait to see what they're going to do next.
Yeah, me too. Absolutely.
Anything else, Aaron?
That's it for me, man.
All right, can't wait to next week to kind of have some time to think about it.
Yeah, digest it all.
To process it all, most definitely. So, all our music is provided by Warp 11, except our intro there by Dave Wilkes. Warp 11 you can find online at warp11.com, on Twitter at Warp 11, and Twitter you can find the show at Synthaholic Duo. Personally, I'm David underscore J underscore Duncan. Aaron's at Blackbird 2004. The website is at Synthaholics.com. You can email us at Synthaholics@yahoo.com, and please join the Facebook conversation where we talk about the episodes, talk about science and you know, memes and whatever you want to talk about Star Trek on our site. Come join us at facebook.com/group/Synthaholics. I'm not blocked this week, so I can interact with people. So,
so that
should be good. You know, I might be blocked as I'm sharing this episode. Who knows?
Who knows? We never know what could happen with you and Facebook. Hey, and if you have time, please go to Apple iTunes, rate and review us there, 5 stars preferably, and you know, say some nice things about the show if you enjoy it. It helps us get seen by the Apple iTunes algorithms, and it feeds to all the other podcasting platforms if you use Stitcher or whatever else you might be using. So if you can do that, we appreciate it. Also, if you have a little money you could throw our way, we definitely would enjoy you as supporting our podcast and helping us produce it. Go to Patreon.com/Synthaholics and, you know, $1 a month. If you can do more, that'd be great. But just to keep this this great podcast coming your way, I mean, we mentioned the top of the show. We had a component meltdown. It wasn't anything. Just its 2-year-old component, and it just finally, you know, gave up the ghost.
We're going to be getting our 3rd year in just a couple weeks.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So we're going to be on year 3 soon here. So yeah, so if you have a little bit of money to throw our way, definitely we appreciate that. Also, lastly, if you know people who like podcasting, like Star Trek, like sci-fi, like offbeat humor, definitely let them know about Synthaholics. I mean, a word of mouth is a great way to support our show. Just to let know a friend or a coworker or anybody know about the show, we appreciate you just spreading the knowledge that we're out there.
Absolutely. And if you are also on YouTube, please subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Synthaholics. You can listen to the podcast that gets posted every week there, along with drink videos and discovery reviews. Well, those are still coming out. Episode The Wolf Inside just came out this past week, and then we'll be putting up episode 12 this coming week. So we're still putting out the video reviews because timing, I wasn't able to get to them as soon as I would have liked, but those will still be coming out for a couple more weeks.
Cool, very nice.
But hopefully we'll move on to other things, although there may be a break in between when we're done with Discovery, when we just start our new video review series.
Nice, cool. Very cool. Well, Dave, it's been a great ride through Discovery, and I'm glad that we could share it together and we could just get this interesting take on Star Trek and the Star Trek universe.
Yeah, me too. It's been a great ride, from reading news to speculation about what it's going to come to reviewing each and every episode as they come out. It's going to be weird going back to like, hey, what do you want to talk about this week? I don't know. I don't know, Brian. What do you want to talk about this week? Same thing we talk about every week, Binky. Star Trek. But this time we're not being given an episode to immediately talk about. So we've got some. We'll have to start thinking about what we're going to be talking about next. And we've definitely got 2-parters for series: Sex and Trek, Religion and Trek, and the Prime Directive. We should probably get back to that.
Absolutely. Yeah, it'll be fun. Get on all those.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Thank you, Aaron, for joining me. It's been a blast.
This was fun as always, Dave.
All right. Live long and prosper, one and all.
Laugh, and we'll bullshit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.